Bob, did you ever have any times when you were doing the strike show that you kind of got outside the box that you didn't intend to?
Well, I remember right here at Oshkosh once, the airplane had been towed, and they went beyond the angles at which you can tow the airplane in on the ground in turning, and damaged the mechanism up in there when I landed. And I think Rob Liddell, the head of aviation medicine and certification from Australia, was with me, and I got a red light on. I couldn't do anything about it, and touched it down and pulled back on the controls and let the nose down again, and the gear was locked. But it had damaged the doors, the gear doors, and so we didn't get it back in the air for the rest of the show. But that's the only real other little problem I had.
Now, on the other side of the coin, let's talk about the 51 and some of your experiences in it.
Well, old Yellow there has seen a lot of situations that were very concerning to me. Before I got this one, I had one that I was demonstrating at Myrtle Beach, and I was actually at a military base, and I was there demonstrating an F-100 Super Sabre, and they asked me if I'd put on the show with the Mustang, and I was just using it for transportation, going to these different safety briefings around the Air Force, where they would provide me with F-86s, F-100s. And I did my routine, and one of the maneuvers just for the before landing, I'd roll right on the approach and dump the flaps. I already have the gear down. I dumped the flaps as soon as I started upside down. About that time, the engine quit, and I was about 800 or 900 feet short of the runway, and I hit in a little creek, with water about 2 feet deep, and I had to do a half snap roll, awful close to the stall to get it right side up before I went in, and for a few seconds I thought, boy, I died, gone to hell. It was solid black. I had mud that covered the canopy and the windshield, and I couldn't see out. And I knew it was one hell of a hard landing, and it was. But we kept the rudder and the numbers, and I got another Mustang for replacement. And that is this one here. No, it is. Excuse me. The next one I lost was right here at Oshkosh. I told the maintenance people at the facility over here to take this reducing valve and give me a fresh load of oxygen the following day, because I had a slight leak in the oxygen system, and they were about 400 pounds each. And I gave them this reducing valve, said, now, please do this for me in the morning and make sure you use this valve. He didn't use the reduction valve, and 2,200 PSI blew the airplane to smithereens. I went around the hangar to go get in the airplane to head to Canada for the next event, and some young man said, too bad about your airplane. I said, yeah, but I think it'll get me to Canada later on this day. And I walked in around, and I saw pieces of yellow all over, everywhere. And a slab of that fuselage came out and hit this one fella servicing the oxygen right in the chest. And he was dazed and walking around the hangar, and the other one was kind of hurt. He wasn't hurt, but the one fella was blown 20 feet with that slab of metal on him. And I was concerned that he might really be seriously injured, and I said, let's go in the restroom here, and I want you to open up your shirt and let me see where this hit you. And he was red all over, and that was the extent of his injuries. So they were both very lucky, but it was a pretty well-destroyed airplane, but it was bought and rebuilt. And a fellow down in Tennessee used it for years, and I did fly it again after he rebuilt it. And then this bird I had bought at that time, and had it ever since. But some of the situations I had with old Yeller here were pretty exciting flights. I had a situation where I'd had an engine change after I had been grounded by FAA, and I was trying to get it ready for Reno and put this new engine in it. We found rust in the other one because it had been sitting for 3 years and they hadn't been running it up as often as they should have. And as a result, we had rust in the screens. And so we had to change the engine, and I was breaking in this new engine, and I had the noise abatement chief at the Torrance Airport riding with me, and they had been giving me fits about the noise level, setting off the alarms all around that airport. And I thought, well, I'll appease this guy. He'd been begging me for a ride. I took him along, and he didn't know anything about flying. He was a noise abatement specialist. And I went out over the Chino area around Ontario and went through my routine checking out this engine. And all of a sudden, the prop ran away. I lost the oil pressure, and it went flat on me. And when, if you can just think of this is 3,000 RPM max. Well, when the prop ran away, it went to 4,000 RPM, and that's way supersonic on a propeller. And the noise around the surrounding country, it could be heard 10 miles away. And the engine ate up just like that. And I had to dump the nose. I was trying to stall, get it up close to the stall to try and get the pitch not to change, and hanging it on its pitch. Well, then when I lost all my lift with that RPM, and it was spitting metal and then fire out of the exhaust stacks, and the nose dropped, I dropped the nose down just to get some airflow over the tail. And I ended up going absolutely vertical. And I was covered with oil, and I could not see out front at all. And this is an unbelievable story. And I was looking at the horizon, not knowing where I was. And I came all the way down and took a flare looking out back of the airplane like this. And it was right at dusk when I landed. And I caught a fence. There was a big ditch, and to keep cattle from going down in this ditch while the fences on each side of the little ravine there. And of course I never saw it or anything, and I went up back and looked at it the next morning. The tail wheel had caught the fence on the far side, otherwise it would have gone right into that crevice. And the terrain was not too bad. It only got the flaps and one of the landing gear doors. And we dropped a new engine in it, and off we went again. But it was a pretty exciting flight, believe me.
Well, Bob, will you tell the story about when you went inverted and the seatbelt broke?
Oh, I was doing a 16-point roll at the Reno Air Races. In addition to that, I would fly three times a day, starting the unlimited races, and then I'd do a show with Yellowbird, and then the Shrike, and sometimes the Sableliner, and my T-28. So I would fly sometimes as many as 7 or 8 flights a day. And on the Mustang, I did this 16-point roll, and the seat belt snapped, came right out of the fitting. And I went right into the canopy upside down, and I was maybe only 100 feet above the ground, and I thought, boy, am I in a world of hurt. I was sitting in the canopy, my back like this, and I could reach down like this with a stick, but my feet were up in the seat. And so I thought if I move the throttle, I'm going to fly right into the ground. And I knew the engine would quit after a few seconds, maybe a minute. And so I just kept pushing forward on the stick upside down. And when I felt I had enough altitude to maybe dish out and save the day, and that's exactly what happened. I went back into the seat, and with a very calm voice, I said, "Hey," to my crew chief, "get me a new safety belt. I've had a problem." And sitting in the cockpit, he was, "My God, it's curtains."
What did, after that, you put two seatbelts in, is that correct?
I had two seatbelts. And Bebo Howard had suggested that to me many, many years before. And he always had two seatbelts. And old Bebo taught me something else. He said, always carry a dipstick and don't trust your fuel gauges. And I think that's what killed him, really. But I kept sticking my hand down in the fuel tank to make sure I had the right amount of fuel for the show. You don't want too much weight. You want just the right amount. And I ended up getting all kinds of sores on my hand from sticking them down in that tank. And then I got smart enough to get a paint stick and use that with marks on it, so I knew exactly how much fuel I had.
Bob, the B-17 just flew over, and that kind of reminded me of your experience. I guess it was up in New Jersey there when you were testing with the Allison engine on the nose.
Oh, that's the one that was just lost recently.
That's right. That's the one that just
B-17 it went in. Well, I did the test work on a very, very high horsepower turboprop engine, and I was at that time a civilian test pilot for the Allison division of General Motors, testing jet engines at high altitude. Incidentally, we didn't have pressurization or heat, and we didn't have pressure breathing on oxygen. And when you sit at 40,000 feet and have a flame out without any pressurization, sometimes you had your hands full. But and the interesting thing about this B-17, on the first flight, I had a test car that called for a certain airspeed at 5,000 feet. And I had an engineer who was an expert on this turboprop engine, and he was operating that engine, and I was concerned with flying the airplane and using the other four engines. And I said, "Okay, let's start. I've got a stopwatch going." And the airplane started shaking. And I said, "I need more power." It started shaking more. And I said, "Look, I'm losing altitude, and I've got full power on all four engines." And I thought to myself, this is going to look great to an accident board. Here's a test pilot with five engines, and he still runs into a stall. Well, the airplane was going down. I kept, "Shut it down, shut it down." Well, engineers aren't as quick as we pilots. Sometimes they don't react as fast as you'd really like them to. And we went from 5,000 feet down to 1,500 before he got the prop feathered. But what we found out, that it was in reverse when it first was starting. And so I thought, boy, that would have looked good on an accident report. Five engines and couldn't stay, keep out of a stall. Well, they corrected that. It went on and it became a very successful engine.
Did you? By the way, the engine was in the nose. I don't know whether I said that or not, but it was in the nose. And it was on the airplane, which is known as Liberty Bell. It was not Liberty Bell at that time. But Liberty Bell is the one that made, it didn't crash. You made an emergency landing, and it sat and burnt for 30 minutes because the fire trucks wouldn't come out there. Now, 40,000-pound airplane had landed, and it didn't sink in the mud, but the fire trucks wouldn't come out there. So leave it to you, just a loss of another airplane.